Welcome to Robert Bellissimo at the Movies. This is a YouTube video podcast exploring storytelling on film, as well as interviews with industry professionals who work in film, television, theater, among other areas of the arts. I'm very fortunate today to have Katie Bolin on my show, who is a writer, director, and actor. Some of her credits include television shows such as Murdoch Mysteries, which she also directed an episode of, Rain and Private Eyes, feature films like The Master, which of course we're discussing today, Born to Be Blue and Adoration. She wrote the screenplay for the film Hoax, The Kidnapping of Sherry Papini. Katie recently made her feature film directorial debut, We're All in This Together, which she also starred in and wrote the screenplay for. Katie, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. What a fantastic intro. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. And we're all in this together. I mean, I feel like you're like the like an Orson Welles type, you know, writing, directing, starring. I'm so amazed that you could take all that on. That's just like, that must have just been, was it overwhelming, that experience?
It's funny that you mentioned Orson Welles. I was like, it certainly felt as unhinged as Orson Welles. yes, it was absolutely overwhelming. What I found the most overwhelming was the post-production process and trying to cut together not the movie that I had in my head, not even the movie that I'd written necessarily, but the movie that I had shot. So that was really the overwhelming part. The wearing many hats on set, I actually felt really quite comfortable doing, because I had, at that point, I had worked with a lot of really great filmmakers and several auteurs like Paul Thomas Anderson, who we're going to discuss today, or Adam Goyan, et cetera. Yeah. And so I sort of felt like I'd had so much on-set experience watching like real masters work that I was less overwhelmed really than I should have been while making the film.
I guess you had so much to do that it's sort of, it helps with the anxiety, because you just, I'm not saying you had anxiety, but I'm just speaking from my own experience. Perhaps when you have so much to do, there's just no time to think. You just got to move. And I know you shot it in like 16 days, right? So
yeah, wow, so it was a very tight timeline. But it's funny when you said anxiety, like right before you said that, I was thinking like, and I'm a person who naturally has so much anxiety, that level of anxiety just sort of felt like, oh, natural.
Right. Yeah. You're just comfortable with it. I know that that's what the film is partly exploring as well. I just saw it the other night. Really, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you for watching it. That's really kind. Thank
yeah,
you.
I really, and the way you transformed yourself with the twins, like it didn't feel like the same actor. Like I just,
oh, that's kind.
And what, I mean, there's the subtle things that you were doing that made the part so different. And even just the subtle things you did just in terms of like wardrobe and hair and makeup made such, it's just incredible. All these little kind of details can make such a difference and such a contrast. So I really liked it. I thought it was really, really good.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you. And yes, like I almost feel like I owe a lot of that performance, or the difference in the performance, to the hair, makeup, and wardrobe team, because I feel like that really goes, especially on a limited budget,
goes
so far. But yeah, thank you for watching it. Anytime someone watches it, I'm like, thank you. I'm like, so, yeah, it's weird that it's out in the world and that people can see it, but I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, for anyone watching, highly recommend checking it out. I just wanted to talk a little bit about your background, because I know that you started acting when you were 8, and your mother is a director and your father's a journalist. What got you interested in acting to begin with?
I think that I was always I was creative, and I was always interested in the arts, and the way that my brain is oriented is like those things always came much more naturally to me than say like science or math. So I knew, I think from when I was a very small child, that I was going to be an artist, or I wanted to be an artist. And in my family, there was so much creativity and there were so many artists that it didn't seem crazy or impossible at all. But I had said to my mom, I think from when I was like around 3 years old that I wanted to be an actress. And she and my dad were horrified because they were not into having like a kid that they didn't want to be like stage parents. They understood how harsh the industry is. And so I think after 5 years of begging, they finally let me try. And I look back on life is such an interesting thing. Like, that's the most obvious statement in the world, but it's interesting because I think I was so driven as from being like a very small child, but I actually think that I didn't know, even though my mom was a filmmaker at that point, when I was a kid, she was still a stills photographer. I thought that like the only way to be a part of film was to be an actress. And then as I got older, I think I found like the more natural path for me or the part of my life. My life now makes more sense for who I am actually as a person, as a writer and a director. But I was heavily, heavily influenced by my mom, obviously, who is an amazing filmmaker, and we collaborate a lot, and she executive produced my film. So for me, I think it was like a more straightforward path to enter the film industry than it is for most people. And like, there's so much conversation now about NEP babies, and like, I am one. And so right. I own that. There's no point in pretending that I'm not. It's like, yes, it was extremely helpful to have a mom that was in the film industry and to have that right. guidance from two parents who were creative and sort of understood those industries and were not out to take advantage of me, but to support.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so you started to build a career. You were doing, you know, you've done so many television shows and feature films, and this moment comes for this film we're talking about today, The Master. Yeah. Did this film come in a traditional way where your agent got you the audition and you went for it, or how did you get the part?
Yes. So it came in a very traditional way. I remember, so I was on a flight back to LA, and Sarah Gadden was also on that flight, and she's an old friend of mine. And she and I were just sort of shooting the shit, talking about what are we auditioning for lately? And I was like, oh, like, I think I'm going to read for this Paul Thomas Anderson film. And she was like, oh yeah, cool. I've heard about it too. And then we both sort of laughed, and I was like, ha ha ha, like I'll never get it. But then you know what I mean? Like, it just seemed, yeah. I was like, that's crazy. And there was no information. I had no idea what the project was about. There was rumors that he was making a movie about Scientology, but it was really unclear. I just knew that it was set in the 50s. So I remember I went to the portable on a studio lot. I remember the dress I wore, and I sat across from the casting director, who is also Paul's producer. And she's just an incredibly gifted casting director and has a lot, as well as producer, and has a lot to do with Paul's movies. Mm-hmm. And we read the scene, and I remember thinking like, that didn't go very well. Like, I was like, that was kind of bad. I definitely fucked that up. And then I remember getting a call from my manager at the time, and she was like, Paul likes your look. He thinks you look really 1950s. And he asked, where are you from? Because it didn't seem like you were from LA. And so that's my memory. And then it was a long and sort of very convoluted process where I didn't get the job until they had been shooting for a while.
Oh,
and then
really?
Yes. So there was a lot of like, you're going to do it. You might not do it. You're going to do it. Oh, this other actress is going to do it. Okay. They're going to bring you in and give you like a really small part. And then I was like, okay, amazing. You know, I would be like an extra, which ultimately I was in that film. It's like, I would do anything to work with these people. And Joaquin was my favorite actor, Joaquin Phoenix. I was like, really, I thought these were like the two best actors in the world that I got to watch work. So the process of getting the job was really strange. And I don't think it was necessarily on the strength of my audition.
So did you, now, when you say that they were like, okay, we're going to give you a smaller part. Now, did you go in and audition for that part, the woman who brings Joaquin to Philip Seymour Hoffman, or was it a different scene?
It was a different scene. It was different for the part. I would say it was for the part that Amber Childers plays. But it was a part that was like quite, I remember it was unclear. And I think that often with a lot of huge filmmakers, like they'll give you a scene, but it's not necessarily a scene that's going to be in the movie.
Right.
And
right.
It might be like a much earlier version. You just know you're reading for like a woman of this age. So I could probably look back through my email and find the scene, but I don't remember what happened in the scene or who I was supposed to be. I just knew that I was reading for a Paul Thomas Anderson movie and playing a woman.
Okay. And now, did you go in the one time, or were there callbacks, or how was the process?
I only went in the one time, and it was okay. Like a month before it shot.
Right.
And the much of what I ended up doing in the movie, it would just be things that Paul would give me to do on the day. So I think a lot of how he works, if he likes a certain actor, or if there's like a sort of really background character, he'll be like, okay, well, you can say this, or you can try this, or we'll add this to the scene, or I had this idea for a scene, would you like to do it? So it wasn't, almost nothing that I ended up doing the film was scripted, and almost none of that made it into the film either.
Okay. Oh, really? So there was more, there was more scenes with that, with you and Joaquin and Phil? Is that what you're, really? Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, wow. There were one of which was like a more sort of romantic scene with Joaquin. There was a lot more that didn't end up in the movie, which I understand. People ask, like, did that really bum you out? And I was like, no. Like, I understand that completely. Yeah. Like, there are times when you're like, it just doesn't work, or I don't need this, or this whole storyline has nothing to do with anything. I just felt it
exactly.
On the day.
It's not personal. Of course, you know, as a who has so much experience, it's just the nature of the beast for all the reasons you're saying. It's, you know, you never just might not fit. Or they don't need it, or they, you know, so yeah. But just done more must have been incredible with those legendary actors.
And that's sort of how I look at that experience now. Like, to watch Philip Seymour Hoffman work, firstly, he was such a nice man. And I remember he did this really, I can't even remember the scene, but I remember like we were sitting in a church in Compton. That's where we filmed most of it. So I was on set probably for like 3 weeks or a month altogether, because also he was shooting
on film. Wow.
Yeah, he was shooting on film, and it was slow. Like, there is, it's not like a Canadian film. Like, you have as many days as you want. I remember all the actors who smoked, who were famous, were smoking like real cigarettes. I was like, oh, this is like a real movie. Like, this is so
good. I love it.
You know what I mean? Versus like every experience I'd had, it's like you have to smoke the fake ones or... So, but I remember he did this really difficult scene, and I was just like, I was 23 years old. I was like, how am I so lucky to be watching this in this process? And like, it was like watching like a witch or some person who's a magician, something that you're just like, this is otherworldly. And then I remember after the scene, either I was part of a conversation or I overheard it, but he said, people asked me like, is it fun? Like, is it fun when you do a scene that's that hard? And he was like, of course not. Like, it's not fun at all. Like, there's nothing fun about it. And that always really stuck with me. And I think has like been, people think like, well, what was like a really formative moment in your life as an artist? That was one of them. If not like the most, because it's like, no, like when people ask me, was making your movie playing twins fun? It's like, no, it wasn't fun. It was hard. And every day it's like, you cannot, like, don't fuck this up. Don't fuck this up. Like, keep, you know, and people ask me now, like, my career as a writer is like very fulfilling. I have a lot of great opportunities, a lot of things in development. Like, I'm, you know, I'm really lucky, knock on wood, as a writer. But people are like, oh, do you like writing? I'm like, no.
Right.
There's nothing about it. It's fun after, if you're like, I'm proud of my work, or it, you know, that moment is fun. But like the actual creation, for me anyways, is not that fun. And so that was really interesting to hear him say that. He was very, you know, it's so tragic, you know, when you think like how he died,
dead,
like just all the performances that were robbed of, you know? You think that that's a complicated psychology. So obviously like maybe life was or wasn't easy for him, who knows, but, he said that Joaquin was very, private. Like there are times when you work with, because I've gotten to work with like a lot of the actors that I really admire, which I feel like I'm so lucky that I got that, those experiences, even in small roles. Like Ethan Hawke was another one who I really, really looked up to. And like, I loved all his novels. He was so inspiring to me as a writer, like, yeah, and just like a all around artist.
Yeah.
He was very personable. Joaquin wasn't rude, but you can tell with some actors who are really famous and very good, there's a vibe where it's like they don't want to talk or they're okay to talk. And it's your job as someone with a really small part to sort of suss that out.
I see. And now when did you first meet Paul Thomas Anderson? Was it not until you got to the set, or was there any meetings beforehand, rehearsal or anything?
No rehearsal. It was when I got to the set.
Okay.
He was very nice, like an extremely kind, personable, normal guy.
I could see that about him just from interviews.
Yeah, there was no part of him that I felt like, I don't know, I think you have a like an idea in your mind of like, this is an auteur or this is like a really famous filmmaker, but then you meet him and you're like, you could tell he's incredibly intelligent, but he was just a nice, normal man. And he would ask me questions like, you're from Toronto, or he would be like, I'm from the Valley. Like just stuff that you're like, I know this about you. Like I've seen Boogie Nights. Right. Like I've read a lot about, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, you already know. But yeah.
Just kind of like shoot the shit, you know?
Of course, to create some kind of connection and rapport. Now, so, you know, you just mentioned Boogie Nights. Now going into this, were you a fan of his work?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's no question. Yeah. One of my favorite filmmakers for sure. But there's moments. It was what struck me the most about that experience was like how normal it all felt. Like it felt in some ways, it felt like no other set because you were like, these are all icons. And then in other ways you're like, this is just a set. Like I'm just sitting in my trailer. Like I'm bored. My friend Josh Close was also in the movie. He's a Canadian actor. I'd worked with him before, which I thought was like a nice moment of synchronicity. Like we had gotten married in a Lifetime movie a few years previous. And so like, I remember a lot of like Josh and I would just be talking. Our shared agent, actually our shared Canadian agent, died during the filming of that movie. So a lot of like he and I talking about that. So it was weird. It was like this surreal experience where I didn't have that much to do, but I was witnessing a lot that I thought was like pretty incredible, but then also just like life was happening.
Right. That's interesting. And so now as a Canadian actor, how were you able to be going to LA and auditioning? You know, because I mean, I know people in Canada, it's always that sort of discussions that go on. Should I go to LA? How do I get papers to go to LA? Visa, stuff like that. Now, did you have some kind of working visa to be able to go back and forth?
Yeah. So I had a green card at that time and I still do.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Great. So when I say like, I was very driven from when I was a child, like I got my first O-1 probably when I was like 18. And so that's a visa that allows you to work in the States. What I think I didn't realize as a young person and living in LA, being an auditioning actress and working, coming home to work and all of that, it just sort of felt like I definitely didn't have enough agency or control in my life. And so now I see that the discomfort I felt in that life was actually like pushing me towards this version of my life where I'm like, oh, I'm the boss. I love that. Yeah, but it's always different being a Canadian actor. And you can tell like the Canadian actors on sets are like I mean, you've made movies, if you made movies in the Canadian system, you've made movies in like the craziest of situations where you're like, we have 8 hours to do this whole thing, right. Or like there's no money, or it's fucking freezing out. So it's, like it's, it all in America, you do have like, I still have like stars in my eyes. Like, wow, this is so different.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. And now did you, you mentioned observing Joaquin and Philip Seymour Hoffman. Is there anything that you picked up on just in terms of the way they acted, the way they approached acting that you really took to heart?
Joaquin, the way he worked, it was like painful, you know, like he lost a ton of weight for the role. He was really in it. He seemed like I would say probably like method or method adjacent actor. So he was that character the whole time. It seemed like it was for him to get to where he wanted to artistically. Sometimes it was hard to watch. Like you were like, this person is really in it or feeling it, you know, like there's like some human level suffering. And that's my reflection of that. I don't know what was going on with him internally. Like maybe that's just how he works and it was totally fine for him. Right. Whereas Phil was, he found it hard, as he said, I think, but he was like a normal guy. Like he would just show up, you would talk to him, he would smoke his cigs, like just be himself, you know?
Yeah, that's what I once did a play with someone who worked with him on Owning Mahoney, which is a Canadian film.
Yes.
He did here. And she said that he was so present and really had all his attention on her that at a certain point, I think she hesitated or something in the scene. And then afterwards he said, what did you want to say there? And she's like, he just knew that she wanted, there was something that she wanted to say in the scene. And she says, well, I can't change it because it's not in the script, you know, as a Canadian actor, like, you know, and he's just a star and he's like, hang on a second. And then he made the change because he just was so, his attention was right on her that he could just see that she had some kind of an impulse that she couldn't follow, I guess, because she didn't have the words to say. But I know he's Meisner trained, right? So his attention, and so am I, not directly from Meisner, but I've studied that approach and teach it as well. And of course, you have your attention right on the other person in the scene. And so I could see that about him.
Yeah, that's really interesting that she also had that experience, because I remember I'm a big question asker to the point that I feel like I can have a full conversation and people will like, I'll just ask. And then it's like, there's not a lot of, I don't share very much. So, and that's not intentional. That's just sort of like how I'm wired, I think. But I remember the conversation with him. He asked me so many questions and I was like, wow, this is so interesting that like this Academy Award winner, like probably like arguably, in my opinion, the best actor in the world is curious about just like little old me, like wants to ask me a question, but the attention that he could put on you, it was disarming and it wasn't uncomfortable and it was incredibly kind. But I just remember being like, wow, like he actually learned things about me, because for however the sort of the conversation was oriented, like he asked a lot of questions. And I thought, like, that's cool. That's one of the few experiences I've had where that's actually happened.
So when you say ask questions, you mean just getting to know you, or are you talking about in terms of the actual work?
Just getting to know me.
That's interesting.
Like,
yeah.
We're just sitting next to each other, like in a chair, in the chairs, just like somehow that it ended up that way. Like, I guess I was probably sitting where like all the less important actors sat. And then I guess he came and sat next to me and just asked me like, oh, you're from Toronto. And people say it's like New York. I don't think that's true. Like, just asking me a lot of questions. And I remember thinking that's really kind that he did that. Like, cause that's something that I'll remember for the rest of my life, you know?
Oh, for sure. No, he's so, he's certainly, to me, one of the greatest actors of his generation, if not in the history of film. Every time I watch him, he blows me away in every film. So he's surely missed, that's for sure. Yeah. How did Paul Thomas Anderson direct? Was he specific with what he wanted? Did he kind of just see what you did first and then kind of play off you? Or how did he direct?
Yeah, he was definitely specific in what he wanted. He would shoot a lot and he wouldn't say action. So in the crowd scenes, the cameras would be on and it would just be, you'd just be talking to your friend, and then you'd realize, oh, they're filming. So he wanted like that, I thought, and I've done that now as a director, because I'm like, that's actually so, so smart, because people do behave differently as soon as they know. Right.
Of course.
It's this whole big thing. It's like, and camera frame, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like a full buildup. Whereas like, if it's just two people talking.
Right.
So I sort of caught on to that pretty quickly. You'd see him be like to the camera guys and you're like, oh, they're shooting now. But he was very specific. He would film me specifically for like reactions. And I remember he would say things like, do less or just listen more, or like he would, it was almost like he was cutting in his mind. Like he would be like, I know I might need a reaction from her, so I'm going to go put the camera and just get that now. And I remember he would sit, like he would get in on the camera and he would look, and then he would look at the frame, like through the eyepiece or whatever. And then he would be like, no, up, up, up. And so he was very involved from like an aesthetic and sort of, yeah. Like, I mean, obviously he's like incredible with a camera, you know, but that was cool to watch because he was hands-on with the camera.
Okay, great. Yeah. I was always curious how he directed, because he has such, I mean, the performance in his films are always so good. Then again, he's always been fortunate enough to work with the best in every,
yeah, so he, like, in I mean, every he's film. He's pretty, he's not like married to what he's written necessarily. Like he'll try things on the day too. So that was also fun and felt exciting. Like it was like, I would go to work and not anything could happen. Like I was like, he could be like, I want to do this scene with you. Or I would watch and see how the scene would change. Or you would look at the sides and then you would watch how it would change. And so much of it for me was just watching, like just sitting, you know? So he would be private. Like if he was directing one of the leads, it would be like, I wouldn't hear the direction necessarily. You would see him talk, but it would be private. Okay. And I also had never worked when you're working with an auteur, the crew almost falls in line. It's almost like a military system, because it's like, he's the general and they are all there to serve him. So I'd never seen such a dedicated crew, and a crew that felt like it had that much of a sense of purpose, and like no one was fucking around at all on the crew, you know? Cause also what I found interesting, when you're working with people at that level, each department head is sort of a celebrity. Like it's like the hair and makeup artists have been nominated for Oscars. The costumes have been nominated, you know? So that was also interesting to sort of, those egos are different too, versus when you're on a regular set and you're like, yeah, I know what the hierarchy is there. It was like, these are all people who are stars in their own.
Right. Top of the business. Wow. Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah. Now the scene that we see you in as one of the followers of Dodd, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. Now, because you mentioned, you know, things were done on the day and some improvisation. Was that scripted, or did that just happen from coming up with it on the spot?
That scene, I believe, was definitely written, because that's like an important plot point in the movie. But I might have just been thrown in there. from my memory. Like he might've just been like, okay, Katie, and then Katie can do it. She can be the one who Right. But I think what was said between them was certainly scripted.
Right.
I didn't even get a copy of the script. Like, and then I asked an AD for a copy of the script and he gave it to me, but I had to read it with like someone watching me. Like it was like, things were very under wraps. So I never had like a physical copy of the script that I kept.
I see. So you just had your sides before the day, I imagine. And then now when you
sides
say
for the day,
sorry, go ahead. No, I cut you off. Go ahead.
Sides for the day and then lines would be thrown at you.
Okay. So he would actually say, okay, now say this, or say, he wouldn't just say, okay, here's the situation and riff on it kind of thing.
No, not for me. For like the main actors, they had lines that were written that I believe they would say as they were written. I'm sure some of it changed, but I know from my experience, it would be like, okay, here's what's on the call sheet today. You may or may not get through it. You probably won't get through the call sheet. And here's what you're doing.
Okay, I see.
So it'd be like, oh, we're going to throw you in this scene and you might say something, or we might put you here, or you're doing this, or, but it's so interesting. It's the movie, I said this to you, I think before we started our conversation, it's the movie I was in the absolute least of any movies I've ever been in. And it's the thing it's the only thing I get asked about. People are like, oh my God, you worked with Paul Thomas Anderson. What was that like? And I'm almost embarrassed. I'm like, I'm hardly in the movie, but like I have other, you know what I mean? Like but I'm happy to talk about it because like when I look back on, especially as my career as an actress is sort of dovetailing or changing into something else and I'm moving into a different space. I look back on it and I'm like, wow, like what a trip that you got to do that. Like when you were so young and like,
oh, absolutely. How cool.
Yeah. But also I'm like, it is weird that I'm not in it at all. And people ask me, it's so often.
Well, I mean, it's such a, to me, it's one of the best films that I've seen made this century. I remember seeing it when it came out and I mean, this and There Will Be Blood also by Paul Thomas Anderson, Phantom Thread. I mean, wow. I mean, I just think it for this century anyways, I haven't seen much better. I mean, it's so emotional and complicated, and these relationships are so, you know, layered and relatable, even though it's within this Scientology backdrop. But I was curious what you think of the film, like after seeing it, how did you feel about it?
I mean, I thought it was incredible. I thought the performances were amazing. There was an element of, I remember when I first seeing it, of feeling like, oh, I'm not in it very much. Or like of a course, lot of, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, so my stuff got cut.
Yeah.
But then I was also like, but how cool. Like, cool that I got to work with these people.
Oh, for sure.
I remember really thinking the movie was just incredible, and particularly the performances. It's not my favorite of his films. Like I would say Boogie Nights is by far my favorite. Magnolia, but I do feel like I'm like, it's like all, I mean, all his work is so, it's like so meaningful. And so, as you said, so complicated, so layered, like all, it's like masterful on every level. But I remember, but like I've rewatched Boogie Nights many times, especially as a director, because you're just like, the shots in that are so phenomenal. And like the pace I love, and almost, and like the plot turns. And so to me, like I think Boogie Nights is my favorite, but I'm definitely proud that I was a part of the master, even in like a very small way.
I mean, it's like you said, even if you were just even if you were doing background for it, that would have been an honor. Like if your face is in it for a half a second, exactly, would have been an honor. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. I was curious if you heard about this book or read it. Adam Neyman's Paul Thomas. He's actually from Toronto.
Yeah, I really like Adam and I know his wife quite well. Yeah, Adam's great. I will buy that book to support Adam.
Yeah, for anyone watching this, I'll leave the link in the description box below because I interviewed Adam about the book. But I just wanted to read one sentence here because he talks about your scene in the book.
Oh my God. And, I didn't know that. Adam, thank you.
And you're mentioned as Katie Bolin playing, he puts your Dodds followers. But I was curious what you, if this was anything that came up perhaps on the set about the line you have, because he says here, you're safe, you're at sea. Freddie is told by one of Dodds' followers, Katie Bolin, upon waking disheveled below decks the next morning. A line with an unsubtle double meaning. To be at sea is to be confused and indecisive, which is to say that her assessment is accurate. Obviously that's a critical interpretation, but I thought, well, it's an interesting take that you say to him, because it's true. I mean, at that point, Freddie is so confused and indecisive and lost, and he gets something out of this relationship, at least with Dodd. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts. It's true, that line, you're at sea. You know, why that obvious kind of line, I wonder, from that character. I don't know if you had anything on that.
Okay, I remember he gave me a ton of different things to say.
Right, so that I figured.
Yeah, he was like, say this, say this, say this, say this. And then I remember shooting that. This is how like sort of young I was in some ways. He shot Joaquin's side and then he didn't shoot my side. So he just wanted my voice. And I remember being like, aren't they going to shoot my side? It's like, no, this is like an O2, like, no, he knows what you know what I mean? Like if he's not cheating your side, it's not like he forgot, like he doesn't need your side of the scene, but, that's cool. That's cool that Adam wrote that and that, I'll write him an email and I'll buy his book. That would be cool to like show my future children one day.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a really wonderful book, and there was a lot that he writes about his films that, because I've liked his films. I have mixed feelings about some of them. A couple of his films I don't like at all, but some are just absolute masterpieces in my view. But I hadn't really given his films probably a lot of thought that I perhaps have with other filmmakers. But yeah, I highly recommend it because there's so much that Adam explores that I think is really worth reading about and considering if you're a fan of Paul Thomas Anderson. So yeah, it's certainly a wonderful read. You know, it's interesting that you say you were wondering why they didn't shoot your side, which as an actor myself, I could totally understand why
you get it, right?
That.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. But it's interesting because when you watch that scene, that character almost seems like you're like angelic, you know, it's like you're the angel who's bringing him over to the, like, it doesn't feel, it feels surrealistic, you
that's
know,
interesting
like,
that you, yeah, the fact that you said that. So that's what Paul would always say to me. He was like, to me, you're like an angel in this film.
Oh, that's
or you're
interesting.
Like, angelic. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you picked up on that. And what I think is, criticism, being a critic, film theory, all of this is like Adam picked up on something that was correct, real happening. His take on it is like, is right. You know, like, I think there was a double entendre to that line and that,
yeah,
I don't know that Paul consciously thought that. So there's like the artist who is working intuitively, or there's just some sort of, either it's like a connection to what, like another world or whatever. And these ideas come into your head and you say it. And then it's like, the interpretation from sort of like an intellectual standpoint.
Yeah.
what Paul was trying to communicate emotionally without even thinking intellectually, like match up somehow. So exactly. That is like, yeah, that's like genuine genius, I think.
Yeah. And I think it works beautifully that you actually are not, that you don't have a close up and so we just see you there, but it's hard for me to articulate why it feels this way, but it just gives it an angelic, surreal quality. Whereas I think if you went closer, it would feel like you are a real person. But since we never see you before or after, it's like, who was that woman?
Yes.
You know, it's like, she's like, you know, like he jumps on this boat and you're the one that has some kind of an I knows about him, perhaps with that line. This is just an interpretation. You're safe at sea. You're at sea, you're safe. And then bringing him over to the master, which of course is the major turning point in for Freddie, right? So I love it.
It's definitely, and also just the whole Scientology aspect of the film was very interesting to me. I remember we would be on set and we would be nervous that Scientologists were there because because it's such a, like, I mean, I'm sure I would be considered like a suppressive person by Scientologists, but it's such a, you know, it's a litigious organization. They do spy. So I remember there were always moments when we'd be like, are some of these background performers Scientologists? Like, what is that? that whole layer of filming was really interesting too. Like, yeah. So it was definitely, it was an experience for sure.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I was curious. This is something I ask guests sometimes, which some people hate this question, but I'm always curious if people had, you know, only if you were only able to watch 5 films that you really liked for the rest of your life, you know, if someone said you could only watch 5 movies, you got to pick what off the top of your head would you go with?
Oh my God, that's
I know that's hard. A tough one.
That's really hard. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, for sure. Boogie Nights. Ed Wood, Cabaret, controversial, but I do love it. Annie Hall.
Oh, wow. Those are all really, really interesting, unique choices. Wow. Yeah. I'm always curious.
Yeah. And then there's the much more modern movies too, but I'm like, just off the top of my head, those were films that like I saw maybe when I was 18, 19. Yes, I would have been around that age when I saw all of them, I think. And that they just, it's like, you're so it's such a formative time. And I remember I was like discovering that I loved film really. And those all really left like a tremendous impact on me.
Do you have any favorite filmmakers? Anyone that's particularly a favorite of yours?
The person who I find like just the most like inspiring in general would be Charlie Kaufman, because I feel like he can communicate like so much about the surreality of life. And like he to me is the greatest mind. And my favorite filmmaker who I like look up, I would almost add Stories We Tell to that list, but my favorite filmmaker who I look up to the most is Sarah Pauly.
Yeah.
There's so much to look up to there.
Yeah, I like her movies. I like her movies a lot, actually. Is there any filmmakers that you, I mean, there may be many, but off the top of your head that you're still want to explore that you just haven't quite gotten to yet?
Yes, so many. I actually feel like I don't have a tremendous like cinema education. There's so many like older films that I haven't seen. I feel like I could really get into like more Cassavetes. Like I have watched them, I would like to watch them from a more.
He's my favorite.
Incredible. But like, I don't want to say from like an academic standpoint, but I would love to almost watch movies with someone like you or Adam and just like discuss after from that POV. For me, a lot of what I watch now, particularly because I'm making films and writing films, like I almost get, I like have fatigue. So I watch a lot of documentaries. That's like the main thing that I'm into watching, just because I'm like, there's so little. It's not like I'm watching and I'm like, oh, I should take notes on this, or that's a really cool shot, I should copy that somehow. It's more like, this is just talking heads. just watch, you know?
I see, almost like a just to get out of the fiction realm. Is that what you mean?
Yes, because I find like, you must feel this way too. I think anyone who works in film or musicians or whatever, it's like, you don't watch it the same way that other people watch it. You watch it right. Like, I know how they did that, or wait, how did they do that? Or is this good? Like, versus like, I'm just immersed in something and I want to turn my brain off.
I see. Yeah. I see what you mean. And could you just, last question, is there anything you could share that you're working on now?
Yeah. So I'm writing my second, film that's called The Funeral Play, that we're going to make later this year. It's based on, I got the life rights of one of my best friend's grandfathers, who put on a play where he sort of memorialized his life while he was still alive, that he made his whole family act in. Then none of them were actors.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So that's my next film. And I'm writing a movie this has inspired me to rewatch The Master, it being about a cult sort of, but I'm writing a movie about a female cult leader that Jemima Kirk is going to star in. So that's what I'm working on now. As far as like I have a lot of TV stuff too that's in development, but those are my two main focuses right now.
Fantastic. And if for people who want to follow you on social media or anywhere else, where's the best place for them to go?
My Instagram, Katie Boland 13 on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. I would say my Instagram. I don't know is the content thrilling? I don't know, but give me a follow.
Fantastic. Well, I'll leave the links in the description box below where you can follow Katie on social media and check. And you have your website as well.
Yeah, katieboland.com.
katieboland.com. Great. So I'll leave the links in the description box below for anyone who wants to follow Katie. Katie, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been such a real pleasure. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was great to speak with you. And like, please be in touch. When we're both in Toronto, I know we're both in Toronto now, but next time let's get together. I would love to meet in person.
Thank you so much, everyone, for watching. If this is your first time here on my YouTube channel, please consider subscribing by pressing the Robert Bellissimo at the Movies logo. You will see it floating above my head in the top left corner, to your top left, in just a second. Just click on that and then click the bell in order to get a notification every time I release one of my new episodes or when I go live. Thank you so much, everyone. I will see you in the next episode.